I'm Christopher Lydon. This is Open Source from the Watson Institute at Brown University, an American conversation with global attitude, we call it. This one is about the headline nation of Iran. It's the novelist's version. CNN pictures of a botched election and a nation, a mulocracy in turmoil, are one thing. What Shahryar Mandanapur gives you in his new novel, titled Censoring an Iranian Love Story, is something else. It takes you deep into an ecosystem of paranoia. Mandanapur's Iran is eternally a young people's country where the revolutionary generations don't much listen or learn from each other. It's the home of inspired storytelling, going back to the 1001 Nights and before, but it also has this very bad habit of censoring its best writers. It's a culture with, above all perhaps, a love problem, over-refined fantasy love, and a deathly dread of the real thing, of boys and girls, say, holding hands in a picture show. Shahryar Mandanapur, who was blacklisted and unpublishable in Iran, came to the U.S. 3 years ago. He wrote his new novel in Farsi as an artist in residence at the Watson Institute. Up the road in Cambridge the other day, he talked with me about this whole web of life, love, and literature in Iran and maybe elsewhere. Shahryar Mandanapur, this wonderful novel, Censoring an Iranian Love Story, is about a boy and a girl trying to find a foothold for love inside this turmoil and the puritanism of Tehran today. It's a very tender story. Sarah and Dara, I love this passage. For example, you write, after leaving the movie theater, they walk together in silence for a long time. Then Sarah notices that Dara is deliberately walking in step with her, as though they are marching together. Sarah smiles and points to Dara's feet and asks, why are you doing this? I don't know, ask my feet. Why is your voice trembling? Ask my heart. With this sentence, Sarah's heart begins to beat rapidly. Dara asks, what should we do now? I don't know, ask our fate. Where is our fate? I don't know, ask our destiny. It's a desperately tender story, and I kept wondering, what is the love problem in Iran today? What is this problem about boys and girls being innocently enchanted with each other?
Mm-hmm. Many of these kind of problems, I try to have some scene of them as a literary work in my book. But the point is, the main point is that in Islam, it is forbidden that a man and a woman, a boy and a girl, that they are not family related together, they shouldn't be alone in a, for instance, in a room.
Mm.
They shouldn't chat to each other. They shouldn't walk together in on the streets or someplace else, even in the movies. Although Iranian young people, they are brave enough that they find the ways to be together, even in some streets or go to the cinema.
But some the library,
of them,
in this case.
A library like it, yeah. But some of them were arrested. When they are walking beside each other in a sidewalk, like ordinary people, there is a sort of patrols against social chastity, yeah? They stop them and ask them, what is the relation between you and you? Mm. On the first days, they said that we are cousins, for instance. Then they separated them. One of the guards asked the boy, what is the name of your father? What is the name of your aunt? Which kind of refrigerator do you have in your house? Mm. And the other one asked the girl, what is the name of his father?
Mm.
What is the name of his aunt? And which kind of refrigerator, for instance, they mm-hmm. have in their, which color or which brand of refrigerator they had in their house. And then if the answers were not matched together, they arrested them. Yeah, when they are chatting together or working together, all the time there is the risk of arresting. And because of it, I can say that love is forbidden in Iran.
Mm.
And the point is that right now Iran is a sexy country. A boy falls in love to a girl. They need to walk together, talk together, go to a park, go to the movies, go to the theater, yeah?
Mm.
Be together and know each other, touch each other. But right now, if one of them has an empty house, they go to the house. Because in the houses, the danger is less. And I think they would be foolish if they sitting there and talk about movies or books. they will do something else. Yara, 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 you know.
Yeah.
And because of it, there is a kind of mystic love in Iran that the lover tries not to touch his beloved. And the other point, it is just sex. This is a problem that our society face in Islamic Republic regime.
Mm.
And as Iran, love in Iran is so complicated. You know?
Tell us about it. I think that might be the core of the problem.
Sometimes, when two Iranian lovers, when they are together all the time, they are scared. They have a sort of nightmare that being arrested. Even if they are in a house, there are some people in neighborhoods that maybe they called Islamic Guard or Basij, Islamic Militia, and they raided the house and arrested them. And if they arrested them when they are making love or if they are kissing each other, I think they will sentence to 80 lashes.
Mm.
And if the boy or the man or the girl or the woman was married, his or her sentences is death by stone. So, although it makes love so exciting, you know, but it is so dangerous. And I think this kind of behavior, this kind of threat upon the head of lovers, maybe somehow corrupt the love. You are not free to find, create beautiful scene in your relation with beloved, you know? You have not opportunity to do it. Because there is no window that they could pass through it to the gardens of love, you know, to inspiration of love.
Mm.
There is no place. In my book, the boy and the girl, they went to a cemetery and sit or a grave that they don't know him or her. Because in this place, the patrols, they won't suspect of them, you know. Iranian cemetery are so different from American cemetery. Here, I like American cemetery because there are trees and it is green and so beautiful. Iranian cemetery is so ugly, and you can feel death there very well. No grass, no trees, just the stone of graves. And it is so sad. in this environment, I think nothing will remain of love, you know?
You know, in your book and in the Iranian tradition, it seems, this goes way, way back, this great tenderness about love in disguise, all the pomegranates and jasmine and all the symbolic representations, and at the same time, this kind of fierce repression. When did this begin, and how in the world does Iran get over it, get past it?
Maybe I can say in this way. From 1,400 years ago, we had another censorship that ordinary people, traditional people, religious people, impose to the others till whenever we had a revolution or uprising. And after this, for 2 years or 1 year or 3 years, we could touch freedom of speech or something, or freedom. Mm. And then the other dictatorship came over us, and censorship began. This kind of censorship, formal censorship or governmental censorship, it was started maybe around 200 years ago, that somebody was in charge of to read books. There were some newspapers in Iran were published and censored it. And in Shah era, it got so stronger and spread their hands all over Iran, you know. And after revolution, as I describe its mechanism in my book, it got harder and harder, sever and sever. And in Ahmadinejad era, Mr. Ahmadinejad era, that he's not my president and he's not Iranian president. In his era, it is so ridiculous and foolish.
So it became the work of the state to do it. And of course, with modern technology, they can at least try to control everything.
Yeah. You know, they bought a sort of software from of an American company.
Software.
Software. To filtering internet sites, web blogs, and it works very well. I have to congratulate to American technology. Although I don't like it. But it works very well. It just find the words as well and deleted them or filter that site or filter that news or filter that weblog. You know, Iranian people right now, they use weblog very well. We have the most webloggers in Middle East.
I know, and our friend Hossein Darakhshan Hoder is the most famous of Iranian bloggers that we know. And he's now in jail.
Yeah. And we had no news about him. Nobody knows.
It's very painful. This flood of CNN pictures and news about Iran is one thing, but the novelist's business of rethinking his country is something else entirely. I want to know about Shahryar Mandanipur's Iran. What is your Iran going through?
Iran society is so complicated. Unfortunately, in American or investor media, there is a cliche seen about Iranian people. Right now, I think it is going to be changed because of a new uprising in Iran. And the Western people, not intellectuals or somebody who are familiar with Middle East problems, ordinary people, they are finding out that maybe as if in Iran there are people here, most of people, and the regime is here, and they can't distinguish between them right now. It has started, but it's good. You know, the cliche scene from Iran, it was dark people in dark, and they shout, death to America, death to America, death to Israel, death to France, death to England, something like it. But it's going to change. Real people right now are in the streets.
We discovered that they look like us, they sing our songs, they show up on The Daily Show as very, very knowledgeable about our country, our politics, our literature, our music.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, particularly Iranian young generation. For instance, when we were in Iran, my son was the fan of Linkin Park, an American rock band. And we could buy their CDs in black market. Although it is forbidden, but many, many of Iranian people, middle class and upper classes, they use satellite. They can watch CNN, they can watch Europa News. And from before revolution, there was an approach to American literature. Mm. Many of American books were translated in Iran.
Which ones?
Oh, so much. It started with Hemingway, I think so. Mm. Then Hawthorne, then Melville, then Henry James, then Carver, Raymond Carver. Mm. Iranian young generation like him so much. Mm. For instance, I like Sylvia Plath, Mark Twain. You can't believe it. Many, many great American writers and poets were translated in Farsi, and we are familiar with them. First of all, before the coup d'etat, there was a movement to translate Russian books.
This is
novels.
1950.
1950 or 1940, yeah. And, you know, on that era, there was a Communist Party in Iran that it was so active. And many Iranian intellectual people were members of this party as well. So, first of all, many, many of Russian books were translated in Iran. Then there was another movement from French literature. Then from English literature. And the last one is from U.S. literature. Mm. So, for instance, I like Fitzgerald so much. Great Gatsby. I love it so much. Somehow I think he's greater than Hemingway, you know? And right now, Iranian young generation, and me as well, We like Kurt Vonnegut. Mm. Because right now, postmodernism is so, the young generation like it so much.
Sharia, you've been an editor of new writing in Iran, in modern day Iran. What do the young writers under 30 say, tell you about Iran's head today? Its heart, too.
First of all, they told us that you and your generation, right now you are classic and you are old. And we try to write newer stories, postmodern stories, you know? This is an argument between my generation and new generation. In spite of suppress and many, many problems that the people have in economy, you know, Iranian people, day by day, they are getting poorer and poorer. But in young generation, you can find many people that they are interested in to be a writer, to be a poet, to be a filmmaker or painter, everything, all the arts. They are so much more than my generation. Mm. It's great. Although they are not as much as they have to be, you know. But for Iran, the situation of Iran right now, it is wonderful, I think so.
Does the censorship promote the young writers, do you think? Does censorship build the new writing? You say the censorship has become hugely efficient in a certain way, and yet you have this, first, you have a generation of writers that cannot wait to commit themselves to literature, and at the same time, in your book, you make a kind of wonderful little joke about censorship. It's been said that censorship is the end of stories. In your case, no, it's the beginning of the story. Your story is about these lovers and the writer telling their story in battle with the censor. And not to give anything away, the censor eventually falls in love with the girl that you've created. So censorship is the beginning of stories in a fashion.
Yeah. It is the beginning, and it is maybe the passion of writing. When I came to you, you know, I couldn't write this book in Iran. If they raid my house, they will get everything, my computers, my notes, everything.
And you, probably.
Yeah. And if they find a copy of this book, I would be in trouble, bad trouble. It is a sort of complex against censorship. When I came here, I felt that I should write about it. There are many good Iranians writers in Iran that they are living in Iran and they have no opportunity to come to the West, to a free country, for instance. And I felt, okay, after 30 years writing under the pressure of censorship, right now, maybe it is a sort of literary responsibility to write about it. And in this book, I try to write a bright story. Before it, all my stories and my novels, they are a sort of dark stories. In some of my stories, the ghosts are the narrator. And you can imagine which kind of a story it could be. Death, suffer, sadness, failure. So in this book, I would try to write a brighter story. Not with a happy ending as Hollywood movies. But it would be bright. I would like to write a bright story about love.
A story that would make young people believe in love, in their own love.
Yeah, that to remind Iranian people that there is love in this world. And it is our right to be a lover, you know. Some of them forget it. And because of Iranian governmental media, in one of Iranian channels, there was a show that in this show, a man and a woman as husband and wife played a story. And you know, the woman all the time has a headscarf in his house as well. One of our clerks protests to this show that they are alone in a room and they are not real husband and wife. It is anti-Islam rules. The director said, "Dear sir, I was there, but behind of the camera, there are many people there. My assistants, Grimor, everybody, there are many people there. They are not alone." And he said, "Oh, I don't care. People watch them alone." So it should be forbidden, this show. Something like it. The problem is like a joke somehow. And although somehow these jokes are bloody. You know, writing in Iran is just like Russian roulette. Mm. You have one bullet somewhere in your revolver, and you don't know where it is. The word that Iranian independent writer choose for his story or his poem could be that bullet for him. Maybe it caused arresting or get killed.
Mm.
You know, some Iranian writers, translators, were assassinated in Iran, in Tehran, in big cities of Iran. We don't have formal statistics about them, but we guess more than 50 person. Why a writer like me, that I am not a politician or a politic writer, why can't I live in my country? Why I should come to U.S. and live in a sort of exile, far from my language, that it is my house, it is my, it is all I have in my hands, you know?
Hmm. Americans today are looking at Iran, thinking Iran, talking about Iran perhaps more than ever before. But there are three items I wish you'd air that we don't talk about. One is the coup in 1953 against a very solid new democracy. The Americans did it. The second was 1979 when the Carter administration welcomed the Shah for medical care and, of course, we lost our embassy to the revolution. And then third, the impact in Iran of the Iraq War. Would you just go through each of those dates and those moments from an Iranian perspective on us? I think they're still hard for Americans to project into the Iranian story. The meaning of 1953, yeah, of 79, and of 2003 in Iran today.
You know, after the 1953 coup d'etat, many, many Iranian intellectuals, political activists were arrested. Many Iranian great men and women were executed by Shah. And after the coup d'etat, it was a process of hopelessness and depression dominated Iranian minds, particularly artists and intellectuals.
You know, I was a child in 1953. We never understood really what was going on. I even remember President Kennedy's man, Dave Powers, used to say about the Shah, "That's my kind of Shah." Mm-hmm. We were supposed to love the Shah.
Yeah.
We thought he was a great guy. We didn't realize what was going on. What was the Iranian view of the American responsibility for all that?
You know, many, many years ago, there was a sort of hate to America because of it. Although when you read some independent historic books in Farsi, we have a couple of them, they mentioned that UK somehow push America to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the Anglo-Iranian oil company, in
yeah,
fact, that
yeah,
had,
yeah,
been,
yeah, yeah,
had been seized.
A revenge on it, you know.
Yeah.
And but America unfortunately did it. And then they support Shah in any ways that you can imagine. All the military devices, tanks, fighters, for instance, F-4.
Mm.
On that era, Iran was the first country that got F-4, and then F-16, F-18, everything. They supported Shah so much. And one of their mistakes was they behave or they deal with Iranians with arrogance. For instance, in Iranian parliament, by the force of the United States, the members of parliament try to have to pass legislation that if an American killed an Iranian, nobody could take him in a court. And he has go to the United States and a U.S. court can have a trial on it, so something like it. It is humiliated to Iranian people. And because of it, Ayatollah Khomeini got the chance against the Shah. One of his protests was this legislation. And days pass and pass and pass. Then the event that America welcomed to the Shah. People hate Shah. Most of people hate Shah and its administration as well. They are so corrupted. And his secret police killed many, many of Iranian-based young people. You know, the best student in the best university of Iran, they went to that guerrillas organizations. Remember, many Iranian best students, genius. Some of them are genius, for instance, in medical science, in mandacy, engineering, or if in science, some of them were great. But they joined to the guerrillas underground organization. And at that era, it has said that a guerrilla, if he or she lives 6 months, he will be arrested by secret police, or he has to kill with cyanide capsule. All the time they had one of them in their mouth. Because there were times that secret police arrested them on the street or their houses. And after it, they knew that there would be a terrible and horrible torture waiting for them. Mm. And they will ask them to say the name of their friends and other members. So some of them killed themselves on the streets. And some of them that couldn't do it were arrested, and some of them died under the torture, and some of them were executed and something like it. It was a dark era on that time. So when America welcomed to Shah, people didn't like it.
This is 1979,
yeah.
Carter time.
Yeah. Our request was that U.S. has handed over the Shah to us, to the revolution. And there would be a court, and he would sentence to death, I think so. But it didn't happen. And because of it, some Iranian Muslim students attacked the U.S. embassy, and the crisis of hostage was started. The cause of this attack is it wasn't just that people want the Shah. They want to make a deal. We will get American stuffs to U.S. You give us the Shah.
Mm.
This is one of the aim of this attack. The other one, that maybe it wasn't in debate as much as the first one, is that on that era, a liberal, Islamic liberal government were in Iran, ruled Iran. Some of them were old political activists. Some of them were, people loved them. Some of them, ordinary people loved them. There is a fight between the source of power, clerics and their followers, and intellectual people and liberals. And they knew if there would be such a crisis between Iran and America, the liberal government would be so weak, and they resign, as it happened. And the clerics got the power, all the power, around Iran. This is another reason of that crisis. So the third one is Iran-Iraq war, U.S. and Iraq war. You know, when I was in my army service, as a rider, not as a fighter, I volunteered to go to the first line of the war, Iran-Iraq war. And I was at war as a young officer for 18 months. And I wrote there many notes, my memoirs, everything. When I saw wrong Iranian ruined cities, when I saw many, many people killed, my friends, my soldiers in my hands, I hate Saddam Hussein. Because a foolish dictator started a ridiculous war. And it took around 8 years. Millions of Iranian Iraqis were killed. I hate Saddam Hussein. So when United States attack Iraq, in the depths of my heart, I was happy, you know? Although I was against the war, you know? As a writer, as an intellectual, nobody could be support a war. Particularly that I saw what is the war, I touch it. But somehow I was happy that Saddam Hussein is going good. Yeah.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend, even if he was my enemy's friend a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah, that's the point. And unfortunately, it didn't go as America predicted or as Iraq is predicted, you know. Maybe somehow it is give some benefit to Iranian regime, what happened in Iraq right now.
Some people would say that in the war between the U.S. and Iraq, Iran won.
Yeah, yeah. Iran regime, not Iran people.
Yeah.
We are going far from literature, you know. Let me say something from my point of view. Literature in Iran, in Iraq, in Middle East, there is a sort of separation between literature and ordinary people, modern literature, modern identity, doubt about the rules, about the traditions, about something that our fathers and mothers believe in them 100 years ago, from 100 years ago. Because of it, you know, literature, a novel, the first lesson of a good novel is that doubt about the people. Don't look at them black and white. People are gray. This is the first lesson of a good novel. And because of the separation between literature or art, there is elite intellectuals that they read books and touch art, and the ordinary people. They, if they read something, they read classic literature. So because of it, tenderness, an open mind, a mind that look for or search beauties of life, it doesn't transfer from literature to ordinary people. So some of Middle East societies and people, they are violent somehow. A sort of violence is there in their heart. You know, when a suicide bomber explodes himself, there is no love in his heart, you know, just hate of innocent people, even innocent people. Something is broken in human relationship. You know, I have a book named Ultramarine Blue. I published it in Iran. It is about 11 stories. It is around 9/11. Some of them will happen in a country like Iran. One of them is happened in Afghanistan, or three or four of them will happen. The location of them are in New York, a city like New York, not real New York. When I saw the scene from 9/11, there is a man that he threw himself from the top of the tower. It was the first scene that I saw from that disaster. And I said to me myself, what's going on in this world? That a man, that somebody should throw himself voluntarily from the top of a tower to the ground. What happened to this? What happened? They are innocent. They are not a military man. They are not soldiers, not guerrillas, nothing. He came, he said goodbye to his family this morning and come to his work. What happened here? There is something is getting changed in this world. I wrote a text after that book and wrote about my feelings, because it was so weird that an Iranian writer wrote 11 stories about 9/11 in Iran, you know? I tried to explain my feelings about this, and I wrote that something is going to change in our world. Some rules are broken, and we will see such as this disaster more and more. I feel it. The sanctuary of human being is broken, you know? Yeah, I'm as a writer, I'm worrying about it. And there is no difference for me. For me, there is no difference between a Western country, a Western citizen, or an Iranian citizen, Iraqi citizen. Why suicide bombers, day by day, they grow and they get more all over the world? Why? Why they are not finished? They kill themselves. But they reproduce themselves. You know, when I went to... Because of good novels that I read, when I went to the war, Iran-Iraq war, the first question that I asked me myself, Shahryar, if you go in front of Iraqi soldier, will you shoot at him? And I found out that I can't. I would try to see his face, and maybe he shoot at me first. You know, Albert Camus has a great, brilliant sentence in one of his articles. He said an artist couldn't be a good politician because, first of all, he tries to know his enemy. Mm. He tries why he or she did that, the causality of his behavior. And when he got the answers, he couldn't be an enemy because he knew him or her very well as a human being, not as a cliche of an enemy, you know. So literature can help people like it. And because of it, our Iranian or Middle Eastern writers and poets, they are a great responsibility to find a way to go between ordinary people.
For a long time, we know the Bush-Cheney folk dreamed of regime change in Tehran. From Barack Obama, it's very different. The signal is Iran will have to work out Iran's future. What difference does that make?
First of all, U.S. should not dedicate $75 million to change Iranian regime.
This is a famous budget line item in the Bush years, $75 million for regime change in Iran. Was it real? Is it still there?
I think
was this a
they
joke?
Gave it to the wrong people in California. it's waste, I think so. And it's nothing. It's nothing. To change a powerful regime like Iran, maybe we need $75 million.
Billion, trillion.
Yeah, yeah. But we don't need it. Because when George Bush's administration announced it, some of Iranian opposition, writers even, journalists, were accused that they are getting money from U.S. to fight against regime. It wasn't a good idea. I think human rights, focusing on human rights, it would be the best way. Focusing in to support Iranian people in their efforts for democracy would be the best way. Unfortunately, some years ago, there was in UN, they voted to a program named Dialogue Between Civilization. It was great idea, but it was failed in this after nobody take it so seriously. Some conferences here, seminars here and there in countries, even in Iran. But after that, it failed, I think so. Something like it, that Iranian people, Iranian artists, Iranian writers, poets could come to the United States. Some U.S. Artists go to Iran and talk to the people, talk to the Iranian artists. You know,
I'd love to go. Will you take me?
I don't dare to take you to Iran, you know.
For me or for you?
Both of them. We can talk. we could have a sort of dialogue between civilization in jail, you know. It's good.
Is part of the story here that Iranian culture is stuck, stuck in a rut? I mean, one of the beauties about your book, if I may say, is that it gives us Iran as a whole kind of ecosystem of history and culture, a great deal of paranoia, authoritarian politics. These from the folks who we know better than we realize. This is where the wine of Shiraz comes from and the 1001 Nights and all those nightingales and almonds and apples, the jasmine, the hidden gardens. And yet it also has this recurring theme of the police state, the public hanging, the cruelty, the repression, the violence. What's to break that cycle?
Actually, I don't know. We are repeating history, particularly in 100 years ago, from 100 years ago. One of the problems is maybe the generation didn't get any lesson from the experience of their last generation. There is a sort of discontinuity between generation of Iran. We talk about it. Right now, there is a new generation in Iran that are... My generation is more than 50 years old. Some of political activities right now in exile, and they died or committed suicide because of hopelessness. But this new generation are not like us, as I find out. We were a sort of romantic generation, idealistic generation we were. In the days of revolution, we shouted freedom. But we didn't have any imagination of freedom. It was just a word for us. That the most brave and great people of my generation sacrificed because of it. But we didn't really know what is democracy. Okay, Shah will go out. We threw him away. And then what? We knew what we don't want. But we didn't know what we have to want or what we want. That was the problem. And because of the dictatorship, came back to Iran as well.
Does your son and his generation know what they want?
Yeah. In my generation, to get killed in a politic activities, in a for a guerrilla organization, it was an honor. Some of us, not me, I was a writer. I tried to be just a witness and write about it. But some of Iranian, in my generation, they opened their hugs to the deaf with proud. But this generation, they just want peaceful freedom of dressing, freedom of love, that they can walk together or go to a coffee net or coffee shop, have a coffee together and talk. And the future, right now, the young generation of Iran couldn't see any future for himself. No job, no enough opportunities to go to the university for them. For instance, there is a sort of entrance exam in Iranian universities. Each year, more than 1 million or maybe 2 million get this exam, and only 300 of them were accepted. 30% of these people are from Islamic militia.
Mm.
Easily, they accepted in the best university of Iran, universities of Iran. And some of them are not good. And some of them got the grades because they are Islamic militia. So Iranian young generation need the opportunity to continue study in university and have a job, have an ordinary life, have a freedom to life.
The pursuit of happiness, as Thomas Jefferson said.
Yes. You know, I had many, many trips to Western countries for reading, but most of them were for one week or 2 weeks. But since I came to the United States, I touch the culture of a Western country a little bit deeper, I think so. There are some principles in this culture, in the mind of the people of democracy. They carved on their mind the constitutional principles as well. We Iranians not get to this step We didn't get to this step yet, I think so. So this generation needs a good life, a good human life, as many, many people all over the world have. That's the point. Maybe they are not as political as my generation. But as I see, as much as the government guards Islamic militia suppress them with the batons, with pepper gas, tear gas, with arresting, torturing, threat, as much as they use these things against them, they got more political. I don't know if it is good or bad. Because I feel that we don't need another bloody revolution to ruin everything. And because right now, we Iranians, we know what we don't want. But we don't know what we want or what we should want as well. That's the problem. The problem remains.
You wrote this book, Censoring an Iranian Love Story. For us, really, for a Western and English-speaking audience, can you imagine it someday penetrating Iran?
Not in these years, I don't think so. I dare not to say that this book is just right for Western reader. Maybe it is a sort of testimony about our culture, about our writers, how much suffer they got in this era. I'm sure that an American writer couldn't completely imagine the meaning of that. You have a book, it is ready to publish. You feel that it is your best short collection that you wrote. And 5 years it takes that there would be a little window in censor machine or censor wall, and then you can publish this book. On the time of that 5 years, when this book is on your table, and you know that you can, the censor don't allow you to publish it, it would be banned or forbidden to publish. It would be like a wound on your body or in your heart. It is your best age of your life. But years, days by days, month by month, years by years passed. And this book, close to your mind. Sometimes you feel that it is your enemy. Yes, it is a wound. It gets old. It is infected in your body. For instance, we had a great writer named Hushain Gulshiri. He said, I don't change even one word in my books. And he didn't. So for 30 years, he couldn't see reprinting of many of his short story collection or novels. He couldn't see. And he died tragically. He was a genius. But many years of his life wasted because of that wounded on his body. His masterpieces were banned. So it is a sad story.
Complicated story. I must say your novel, Censoring an Iranian Love Story, for me is a wonderfully coherent picture of a society in pain. We see it on television, but it's different and richer in your book. And I have to say also, I believe in the love story at the end. I love Sarah and Dara. And
We all end up believing in their love, if not being able to bet on it exactly.
Mm-hmm. You are appearing in my new novel as well, both of them.
They're back in your new novel?
Yeah.
Good.
And I wonder if they could have each other or not after a long time of separation. The novel will start it after 7 years later. It is 7 years that they didn't meet each other.
Mm.
And, okay, I'm writing it.
They're still in love?
They're still in love. And sorrow, I don't want to reveal the plot of the story. But I can say that sorrow came back from Spain. She was living in Spain with a rich husband to find Dara and gave her virginity. After 5 years marriage, he's virgin as well.
Mm.
This is a new plot of Sarah and Dara. And he couldn't find Dara. She couldn't. I'm thinking about it. If at the end of the novel, if she can find him or not. I would like to add, when we were talking about classic Iranian literature, that because of censorship, because of Islam concern, because of fundamental people here and there, because of the king, because of the sort of police that they were on that era, great poets and great prose writers of Iranian literature, they used symbols and metaphors. They made so much beautiful symbols. For instance, when they want to talk about the virginity of a girl, it would be a pearl in an oyster, you know? Think about it. It is, in one hand, so sexy, and in the other hand, it is a covering on it, the cover of metaphor on it. We got our roots from that literature as well. Right now, in this era, an Iranian writer can use the word dance. For instance, in one of my friend's books, there was a sentence that the leaves, it is autumn, it is fall, the wind is blowing, and he wrote, the leaves are dancing and falling down. They suggested them change the word to dance. Yeah, that's the problem, you know?
And yet the beauty of the book is that in the end, the censor falls in love.
Yeah, this is a great point. You know, not right now. Right now, we couldn't see the censor. Somebody was charged in censorship. We couldn't see him. There is just a secretary. But after revolution, around 20 years, we could talk to somebody who was in charge in censorship. And the beautiful point is that when they started their job, they were not familiar to the rules of no novel or even novels. Maybe they didn't read any novels. Mm. But after reading some novels so carefully, more careful as an ordinary reader, word by word, and get back and search in this book, for instance, after 2 years and after 3 years, they were a sort of intellectual censor. And they have a sort of tolerance with us. And they got permit to some novels. Because of this situation, or this kind of metamorphosis, we could publish our book. Mm. And they changed him suddenly, you know. And some of them are in a court, and they accused, they sentenced to be in jail as well. This is the power of literature, you know? change people. You know?
So what does it mean at the end that the censor is in love with your character? Really in love, wants to be introduced.
What I'm trying to say. He changed. He changed. He's feeling love, you know?
Mm.
Because on that culture, on the fundamentalist culture, love, there isn't any place. Just love to God or love to be a martyr or something like it. But when some of them start reading good novels, that it is translated or it is from an Iranian good writer, for instance, for 3 years, each week one novel they have to read, for instance, the power of literature, the soul of literature, make some changes in their mind. For instance, the doubt to the taboos, religious taboos. I can't say that this scene directly means this meaning, you know? Maybe one of the meaning of that the censor fall in love to Sarah is that Sarah is not a real character. He's a real person. He's just a literary character, you know?
So maybe love is the way after all.
I think so, yeah. In this world as well, not only in Iran, but also all over the world.
Keep writing.
Yeah, yes, what can I do?
We will keep reading. Shahryar Mandanipour, it is a great privilege and a pleasure to have this time with you. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Paul McCarthy edited this conversation with Shahryar Mandanipour. Our Brown University interns Hannah Olson and Chantal Berman helped me think through the book and the interview. Thanks also to Mr. Mandanipour's translator, Sarah Khalili. Make your own connection between the novelist's Iran and the Islamic Republic in the headlines, and send us a comment at radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Lighton. Thank you for joining us.